Haunted, Tales of the Supernatural. George Baker and Jeremy Clyde star in The Dead Man of Varley Grange, dramatised for radio by Patricia Mays.
I had known Captain Jack Darrant for several years, and he was, I suppose, what people call a likeable rogue. He seemed incapable of settling anywhere or into anything. To all intents and purposes, his prospects were dim, but Jack would only smile and laugh off his future as something he could worry about tomorrow or the day after. But he never did. My wife Bella liked Jack too, but my sister Amelia, who lived with us, was in love with the handsome officer and barely concealed it, not even to Jack, who, when Amelia's affection showed, would simply say, "I've no time to settle down, at least not yet." He would be gone for days, weeks, or several months at a time. So it was a pleasant surprise when one day, as I entered my club, I saw Captain John Darrant sitting in a chair near the door of the smoking. Hello, Jack.
Lester.
Haven't seen you at the club for some time. Where are you off to? Home for Christmas?
Oh, my dear fellow, do I look like the sort of man to be victimised at a family Christmas meeting? Do you know the kind of business they have at home? 3 maiden aunts and a bachelor uncle, my eldest brother and his insipid wife, and all my sister's 6 noisy children at dinner, church twice a day and dull conversation between the services. No, thank you. I have a great affection for my old parents, but you don't catch me going in for that sort of national festival.
You irreverent ruffian. Now, if you were a married man...
Ah, if I were a married man, how is dear Amelia?
My sister is quite well, thank you. She's been going to a great many balls and enjoying herself.
I don't see how a poor fellow in a marching regiment, a younger son, too, with nothing in the future to look to, is ever to marry nowadays, when girls are used to so much luxury and extravagance they can't live without it. Matrimony is at a deadlock, Fred, chiefly owing to the price of butcher's meat and bonnets. Mark my word. By the turn of the century, it will become extinct and the country will be depopulated. But I must be off now, old man, or I shall miss my train.
But you'll never tell me where you're going, Jack.
No, I'm going to stay with old Henderson in Westonshire. He's taken a furnished house with some first-rate pheasant shooting for a year. Ah. And there are several of us going, all bachelors and all kindred spirits. We shall shoot all day and smoke half the night. Think what you've lost, old fellow.
In Westonshire? Whereabouts? I know every nook and cranny in that county.
Though it's a tumble-down sort of old house, I believe. Gables and twisted chimneys outside and uncomfortable spindle-legged furniture inside. You know the sort of thing. But the shooting is capital, Henderson says, and we must put up with our quarters. He's taken his French cook down and plenty of liquor, so I've no doubt we shan't starve.
What's the name of it?
Ah, let me see. I have the letter of invitation here. Ah, here it is. Varley Grange.
Varley Grange?
Yes.
But I know it. It's not been inhabited for years.
Well, I believe not. The shooting has been let separately, but Henderson took a fancy to the house too and thought it would do for him, furniture and all, just as it is. My dear Fred, what are you looking so solemnly at me for?
Jack, let me entreat of you not to go to this place.
Not go? Why, Lester, you must be mad. Why on earth shouldn't I go there?
There are stories. Uncomfortable things are said of that.
I dare say it's cold and draughty and infested with rats and mice, and I have no doubt the creature comforts will not be equal to Queen's Gate. But I stand pledged to go now, and I must be off this very minute. So have no time, old fellow, to inquire into the meaning of your sensational warning. Goodbye, and remember me to the dear ladies.
Write to me if you have time.
There you are, Frederick. Just in time for tea.
Hello, Bella, my dear.
Come and sit down, there's a dear. Amelia's just about to join us.
Good. She will be pleased to hear that I saw Jack Darrant today.
Did you? Oh, how marvellous. And how is he? We haven't seen him for ages. Did you invite him to dinner? Now, that would be nice, and Amelia would be so grateful.
And what would I be so grateful for?
Oh, Amelia, dear. Frederick has seen Captain Darrant today.
Oh, have you, Frederick? Have you really?
Yes, he was at the club.
And how is he?
He's very well. Very well indeed.
And is he coming to see us sometime?
You mean, is he coming to see you?
Well, I cannot deny it would be very pleasant to see Captain Darrant after all this time. It's been ages.
Months.
Well, you know, Jack, here, there, everywhere.
Frederick, I've just had a splendid idea. If he's not going anywhere for Christmas, why can't he spend it here with us? Now, Amelia, what do you say to that?
Oh, Frederick, that would be nice. I don't expect he's looking forward to staying with his family.
You're right. He's not going home for Christmas.
Well, then, you must send him a note and invite him to spend the Christmas festivities with us.
I don't think that'll be possible, Bella.
Why?
Is it because of me?
My dear, of course it isn't. You know Jack has the highest regard for you. But he has his pride.
Oh, men and their pride.
We've talked this out before. Bella, can't you make her understand?
Amelia, I'm afraid Frederick is right, and so is Jack. What money, what future has he to support a wife?
I suppose if he thought anything of me at all, he would have tried to arrange his life by now.
Jack is a restless spirit. I suppose some men are. How long it will last, I don't know. But I'm sure the time will come when, like all young men, he will settle down.
You have said that before, Bella, and I believed you.
There's no other explanation, Amelia. There's no question that Captain Darrant is very, very fond of you.
Indeed. He asked after you.
There you are. But a man who's only known the army for a career needs time to adjust to new circumstances. Anyway, we still don't know, Frederick, why he can't come here and spend Christmas with us.
Because he has already made other arrangements.
Oh, no, that is a pity.
Oh, excuse me, please.
Amelia. Really, Frederick, that young man makes me so angry. Does he know what he's doing to your sister?
Probably not.
Can't you say anything to him?
Bella, I cannot interfere in another man's affairs, even though Jack is a close friend of mine. In any case, I think he's right. The thought of my sister marrying a man with little prospects would concern me greatly, as indeed it would him. For whatever else he may be, he's a man of honour, and he would not condone a situation where he thought he was being kept.
Men's pride again.
Yes, if you like. But there is something else which to me is far more worrying than that. I'm pleased Amelia has left us for a moment.
What is it? Is it about Jack?
Yes, I'm afraid it is. It's where he's going to spend Christmas.
What do you mean? Why should it concern us?
Because he's going to stay in Westonshire. At Varley Grange.
Varley Grange?
I don't want you to say anything to Amelia, do you hear?
Of course, I wouldn't breathe a word. But Varley Grange hasn't been inhabited for 10 years. And the last time... Oh, Frederick, you must remember those poor people who took it. What a terrible story.
Apparently a man by the name of Henderson, a bachelor like Jack, has rented it for Christmas and has asked down a party of men for a week's shooting. Jack Darrant is one of them.
Frederick, you must prevent him from going down.
My dear, he is already gone.
Then write to him. Telegraph him and beg him to come back. Ask him to stay here.
I'm afraid it's of no use. He wouldn't come back. He wouldn't believe me. He would think I was mad.
Then you did not tell him the story of Varley Grange.
I had not. There had not been time. Besides, if I had, Jack would have laughed. The story is vague enough. In the old days, Varley Grange belonged to an ancient family of Varley, now completely extinct. There was, some 100 years ago, a daughter, famed for her beauty and her fascination. She wanted to marry a poor, penniless squire who loved her devotedly. Her brother Dennis Varley, the new owner of Varley Grange, refused to give his consent and shut his sister up in a nunnery that used to stand outside the park gates. A few ruins remain. The poor nun broke her vows and ran away into the night with her lover. But her brother pursued her and brought her back with him. The lover escaped. But the Lord of Varley, swearing that no scion of his race should live to disgrace and dishonour his ancient name, murdered his sister under his own roof. Ever since that day, Dennis Varley's spirit cannot rest in its grave. He wanders about the old house at night, and those who have seen him are numberless. Now and then, the pale, shadowy form of a nun flits across the old hall or along the gloomy passages, and when both strange shapes, the murderer and his victim, are seen together, then misfortune and illness and even death are sure to pursue the luckless man who has seen them with remorseless cruelty within the year. Jack? Jack, old boy.
Oh, hello, Fred.
Oh, what's the matter, man? You look ill.
But have you a moment to spare, Fred? But come into the club. I have something to tell you. Oh, the smoking room should be empty at this time of day. You were quite right, Fred. You know that? About Varley Grange?
What do you mean? Have you seen anything?
Well, let's sit here. I tell you, Fred, I've seen everything. Oh, my God, they say one dies within a year.
My dear fellow, don't believe those stories.
But you believe them, Fred, don't you? Let me tell you what happened. You remember the day I went? I had a race to catch the train, however I just did it. I found the other fellows all waiting for me. There was Charlie Wells, the two Hartfords, old Colonel Riddle, who is such a crack shot, a fellow in the Guards, a man called Thompson, a barrister, Henderson and myself, eight of us in all. We had a remarkably lively journey down, as you may imagine, and reached Varley Grange in the highest possible spirits. We all slept like tops that night. Well, the next day, we were out from 11 till dusk among the covers, and a better day's shooting I never enjoyed in the whole course of my life. The birds literally swarmed. After dinner, we adjourned to the hall to smoke. This hall is quite the feature of the house. It is large and bright, panelled halfway up with sombre old oak and vaulted with heavy carved rafters. At the farther end runs a gallery, into which opened the door of my bedroom. Well, all we fellows sat up there, smoking and drinking brandy and soda and jawing, you know, the way men always do when they're together, about sport of all kinds, hunting and shooting and salmon fishing. And I assure you, not one of us had a thought in our heads beyond relating some wonderful incident of a long shot or a big fence by which we could each cap the last speaker's experiences.
Well, that was nothing to what I experienced in India.
No.
Yes, miss the place. Yeah. India's not known for its fishing, as you can imagine, but the shooting is some of the greatest I've ever known.
Sorry to interrupt you, Colonel. Yeah? What's the matter with Wells?
Aren't you listening, Wells?
What are you looking at? Up there. Standing on the gallery behind us.
Yeah, what's the fella talking about?
My God!
Can you see him?
Yes. Good Lord. Who is it?
Not who is it.
What is it?
Don't move. Don't anyone move.
He's staring at us. Just staring at us.
Have you noticed something?
What? How cold it's suddenly become.
Yes. Yes, you're right. Yet look how brightly the fire burns.
We all saw him. Every one of us. He stood there a full 10 seconds, looking down at us with horrible glittering eyes. He had a long tawny beard, and his hands, which were crossed together before him, were nothing but skin and bone, but it was his face that was so unspeakably dreadful. It was the face of a dead man.
How was he dressed?
I couldn't see. He wore some kind of black cloak over his shoulders, I think, but the lower part of his figure was hidden behind the railings. As I said, he stood there about 10 seconds, and then the figure moved, backing slowly into the door of the room behind him, which stood open. It was the door of my bedroom. There was a general rush for the staircase, and as you may imagine, there was not a corner of the house that was left unsearched. My bedroom especially was ransacked in every part. But all in vain, there was not the slightest trace to be found of any living being. You may suppose that not one of us slept that night. We lighted every candle and lamp we could lay hands upon, and sat up until daylight. But nothing more was seen. The next morning, I tried to discuss it with Henderson over breakfast.
I'd rather we didn't talk about it, Jack, if you don't mind.
Yeah, but you saw it, Henderson.
Yes, I know.
All of us saw it.
I said I know. It was a practical joke of some kind.
Oh, it must have been.
For goodness sake, man.
A joke? Who would play such a joke? And how did he manage to get out of my room when we went up there?
Oh, a secret panel, maybe. I don't know.
Well, well. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, Colonel.
Where are the others? Not still asleep, are they?
Don't tell me you slept soundly, Colonel. They'll be down in a minute, I expect.
My dear fellow, I always sleep soundly. Oh, perhaps they're talking to our friend, eh?
You could be right, Colonel.
I think that's in poor taste.
Well, the Colonel probably takes the view as I do.
Oh, what's that?
But what we saw last night was some kind of practical joke.
My view exactly, old man. One of the servants dressed up, something like that.
Servants?
Well, if he was one of mine, I'd shoot him.
I hardly think one of my servants would do such a damn silly thing. Now, what sort of people do you think I employ?
All right. I apologize, old man. Just searching for some kind of explanation. So, what's your view, then? Wasn't any of us. I mean, we were all there, remember? No, old chap. You've got an unexpected guest.
Well, the Colonel's right.
I think we should cease to discuss it.
How can we forget something like that?
Well, I agree you can't wholly forget it, but try and put this apparition out of your mind as far as you can.
We, of course, readily agreed to do as he wished, although I do not think that one of us imagined for a moment that any amount of dressing up would be able to simulate the awful countenance that we had all of us seen only too plainly. And such a person could not be amongst us, actually in the house, without our knowledge. That evening, at Henderson's suggestion, we all appeared in the hall after dinner with loaded guns. But although we sat up till the small hours and looked frequently up at the gallery at the end of the hall, nothing at all disturbed us that night. Two nights thus went by, and nothing further was seen of the gentleman with the tawny beard. And what with the good company, the good cheer, and the pheasants, we had pretty well forgotten about him. On the third night, we were sitting as usual with our pipes and our cigars. A pleasant glow from the bright wood fire in the great chimney lighted up the old hall and shed a genial warmth about us.
Give the fire a poke, will you, Wells, old chap?
What?
It's getting cold. Put another log on or something.
Oh, my God.
What's the matter, Henderson?
Please, God, please say I'm mistaken.
He's there again.
It's getting colder by the second.
He's just standing there, staring.
The same man.
If I reach for the gun.
Steady, Colonel.
Those eyes,
they pierce you.
I've got the gun.
Well, then fire it, for God's sake.
Hurry, Colonel. He's still there.
He's moving back, like he did before, into my bedroom.
I couldn't have missed. I'm a crack shot, damn it. I couldn't have missed.
It is a singular and remarkable fact that four out of the eight of us received by the next morning's post, so they stated, letters of importance which called them up to town by the very first train. One man's mother was ill, another had to consult his lawyer, whilst pressing engagements to which they could assign no definite name called away the other two. There were left in the house that day but four of us. Wells, Colonel Riddle, our host, and myself. A sort of dogged determination not to be scared off kept us there. The morning light brought a return of common sense and natural courage to us. We managed to laugh about the previous night's terrors at breakfast in the pleasant morning room, with the sunshine streaming cheerily in through the diamond pane windows.
It must be a delusion of our brains.
Our host's champagne, more like it.
I'll tell you what we'll do. Now that those other fellows have all gone, and I suppose we don't any of us believe much in those elaborate family reasons which have so unaccountably summoned them away, we four will sit up regularly night after night and watch for this thing, whatever it may be. I do not believe in ghosts. However, this morning I've taken the trouble to go out before breakfast to see the rector of the parish, an old gentleman who's well up in all the traditions of the neighbourhood. And I've learnt from him the whole of the supposed story of our friend of the tawny beard, which, if you will, I will relate to you.
Henderson then proceeded to tell us the tradition concerning Dennis Varley, who murdered his sister, the nun, a story which I will not repeat to you, Lester, as you know it already. Furthermore, the clergyman had told him that the figure of the murdered nun was also sometimes seen in the same gallery, but that this was a very rare occurrence. When both the murderer and his victim are seen together, terrible misfortunes are sure to assail the unfortunate living man who sees them. And if the nun's face is revealed, death within the year is the doom of the ill-fated person who has seen it.
Of course, I consider all these stories to be absolutely childish. At the same time, I cannot help thinking that some human agency, probably a gang of thieves or housebreakers, is at work, and that we shall probably be able to unearth an organized system of villainy by which the rogues,
presuming on the credulity of the persons who have inhabited the place, have been able to plant themselves securely among some secret passages and hidden rooms in the house, and have carried on their villainy undiscovered and unsuspected. Now, will all of you help me to unravel this mystery?
I agree.
Well, I must say, I resent being terrorized like
this. Yes, you can count me in, Henderson. I feel like Darren here. No one's going to try and scare me without a damn good fight.
Good.
Of course, if we see the nun...
We'll all know who she's come for. Hey, chaps?
Jack Darrant, of course. He's the handsomest man here.
That's a challenge for you, Darrant, old man. A nun, eh?
A nun wouldn't be a challenge for you, Darren, would it? A soldier, eh?
Oh, all right, you chaps, that's enough.
Good God, look at him. I do believe he's embarrassed.
That was 11 o'clock in the morning. We were brave then.
So what did you do?
At 11 o'clock that night, each man took up his appointed post in solemn and somewhat depressed silence. The plan of our campaign had been carefully organized by our host. Each man was posted separately, with about 30 feet between them, so that no optical delusion, such as an effect of firelight upon the oak panelling, nor any reflection from the circular mirror over the chimney-piece, should be able to deceive more than one of us. Our host fixed himself in the very centre of the hall, facing the gallery at the end. Wells took up his position halfway up the short flight of steps. Colonel Riddle was at the top of the stairs upon the gallery itself. I was opposite him, at the farther end. In this manner, whenever the figure, ghost or burglar, should appear, it must necessarily be between two of us, and be seen from both the right and the left side. Each man was provided with a loaded revolver, a brandy and soda, and a sufficient stock of pipes and cigars to last him through the night. We took up our positions at 11 o'clock exactly, and waited. I never remember such a night in all my life. We all sat on at our separate posts, hour after hour, listening to the wind and talking at intervals. But as the time wore on, insensibly we became less and less talkative, and a sort of depression crept over us. At last we relapsed into a profound silence. Then, suddenly, there came upon us all that chill blast of air, like a breath from a charnel house that we'd experienced before, and almost simultaneously a hoarse cry broke from Henderson in the body of the hall below, and from Wells halfway up the stairs. Colonel Riddle and I sprang to our feet, and we too saw it. The dead man was slowly coming up the stairs. He passed silently with a sort of still, gliding motion within a few inches of poor Wells, who shrank back, white with terror, against the wall. Henderson rushed wildly up the staircase in pursuit, while Colonel Riddle and I, up on the gallery, fell back instinctively at his approach. He passed between us. We saw the glitter of his sightless eyes, the shriveled skin upon his withered face, the mouth that fell away like the mouth of a corpse beneath his tawny beard. We felt the cold, death-like blast that came with him and the sickening horror of his terrible presence. Can I never forget it?
My dear fellow.
Forgive me, Lester. The whole business has shaken my nerves so thoroughly that I have not yet been able to get over it. But I have not yet told you the worst.
Is there worse?
There is, my friend. As we stood there in the hall, in a state of paralyzed fear, Wells suddenly gripped my arm.
Jack! Jack!
What is it?
At the end of the gallery. Henderson, Colonel! Can you see it?
What now?
What's the matter, Wells? Coming towards us. Oh, my God. It's her,
the nun.
Oh, my God! Help us! Help us!
For God's sake, Wells! This must be a hoax. A ghastly, sickening hoax, and it's got to stop.
Jack, what are you doing?
Come back, man!
Stay away! Let's get out of here before we're all dead!
I tell you, this whole thing is one great hoax, and I'm going to find out who's behind it.
Get him back, Henderson!
There's nothing I can do! He's going to touch her.
Look!
It's raising her head!
Don't look! Turn away, all of you!
What did she look like, Jack?
That I can never tell to any living creature.
Was it so horrible?
Yes.
What happened next?
I believe I fainted. At all events, I remembered nothing further. They made me go to the vicarage the next day. I was so knocked over by it all. I was quite ill. I could not have stayed in the house. I stopped there all yesterday, and I got up to town this morning. I wish to heaven I'd taken your advice, old man, and had never gone to that horrible house.
I wish you had, Jack.
Do you know that I shall die within the year?
My dear fellow, don't take the thing so seriously as all that. Whatever may be the meaning of these horrible apparitions, there can be nothing but an old wives' fable in that saying. Why on earth should you die? You, of all people, a great strong fellow with a constitution of iron. You don't look much like dying.
For all that, I shall die. I cannot tell you why I am so certain, but I know that it will be so. The others are safe, for they did not see her face. It is I who, for certain, is doomed.
A year has passed away. And what of Jack Darrant? Poor, handsome Jack, with his tall figure and his bright, happy face, and the merry blue eyes that had beguiled my sister's heart. Alas, far away in southern Africa, poor Jack Darrant lies in an unknown grave, slain by a Zulu assegai on the plain of Isandula, the only one from that fateful night to be dead. And my sister goes about clad in sable garments, heavy-eyed and stricken with sore grief, a widow in heart, if not in name.